Welcome to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Quizmaster Lee, and I'm joined, as usual, by Quizmaster Mark Davis.
Me.
What's up, bro?
Not too much. How are you?
I'm doing good, doing good. Just laughing my ass off at some of these best worst answers I had this week.
Yeah, I know that you posted one. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what the question was. I remember the answer.
It was the question was the hottest temperature on record on the planet Earth was 136 degrees Fahrenheit in El Azizia, which is located in which North African country?
And the answer?
Well, the answer is Libya.
Okay, that's the real answer.
But the answer that was written down
was Asia.
Yes, which is neither in Africa nor
or
a country.
African country.
That's
it's
a continent.
Not a country. And if it was a country, it wouldn't be an African country.
Now, normally, I would just assume that people know this as a common knowledge, but I was surprised to see this. So if there's anybody out there listening, you should know Asia, a continent.
Yes.
Not in Northern Africa.
I think Australia really throws a lot of people off in school.
Australia?
They go through, yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought you were bringing that into the mix for no reason.
No.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, I think they're like, oh, North America, we live in America, like close enough. And then, they go through a couple and they're probably like, Australia, well, it's a continent and it's a country. I think that kind of short circuits something.
Yep. It definitely did them this week. Yeah. Another funny best worst answer I had, and multiple teams wrote this down, was what type of tuba is named after a composer of a famous American composer of military march music? Now, you probably know the answer here.
Philip Sousa, sousaphone.
Right. But apparently some people think that there was a man named John Philip Baritone. And I got
so
him, too.
So close.
I said, if you wrote down baritone, and a few teams went, yeah! And I was like, I'm so sorry, but there is no John Philip Baritone.
Yeah, sometimes people get really, like, they're really quick on the draw when they think they got it right. And when you're doing that sarcastic thing,
yeah,
it hurts.
Which I
double.
Love. It's, yeah. That is like... I don't know. Just I love dipping into the wrong answer. You can't overdo it. You can't do it like every question. Say the wrong answer first, you know, when you're reading the
right.
correct answers. Because people expect it.
Right.
You got to, just like Namibia, you know, you got to keep them spread
it in.
Far out, you know, distributed, well distributed.
Indeed.
So, yeah, good week. We don't really have, in case you haven't couldn't tell, we don't really have a prepared topic for this intro. So we're just going to do a short and sweet episode, just me and Mark here.
Cut right to the chase.
Yeah, yeah. So let's continue with our weekly wrap-up.
Sounds good.
Monday, September 9th at the Palace, it was Team Ross that took the first round, while me and you and a dog named Rue took the second round. That's Elise solo style. Well, with her dog, Rue. But neither could stop Moistimus Prime from taking the overall victory with 106 points. On Tuesday, September 10th at Gather, it was a total shutout victory by Tarpon Charlies, who ended the night with 101 points. Knowing the answer to our final wager question, that Led Zeppelin frontman Robert Plant had a thing for Joni Mitchell and wrote the song Going to California about the singer-songwriter, helped cement their victory that night. On Wednesday, September 11th at Bury Me Brewing Company, House Snow took the second round, preventing Pootie Tang from a total shutout victory, but the Tang still ended the night with a very respectable final score of 112 points. Shout out, by the way, to proverbial lightkeeper Hank for stopping in for some trivia, keeping it patriotic on September 11th with the team name Go to Trivia or the Terrorists Win. He's doing it for his country, folks. And then on Thursday, September 12th, 2019, at number 3, we had a tight top 3 between the teams As You Wish, Old Friends in the Squeaky Chairs, and Peanut the Dog Denies the Armenian Genocide, with As You Wish coming out on top with 90 points overall. That team consisting of Quizmaster Dallas and Joe from the We Do Stuff podcast, as well as Elise. Dallas was riding that birthday energy. Happy belated birthday to him. Mark, how did your teams do at Nice Guys Trivia this week?
All right. My teams did well. We had Jamie's team, Cool Rubbings, who took the first and second round.
Good
no reaction to Cool. Okay.
No, yeah, good name.
Okay.
Cool Rubbings.
Cool Rubbings.
Continuing the theme of risque movie titles.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But they could not hold it up to the third round.
Mm.
The third round, they got buried by Team Lips with 61 points.
Good job, Team Lips. I like people keeping Jamie in his place. Well, not just Jamie, but that whole team.
Yeah,
they're just too good. That's all.
It does, and I always worry it looks like collusion. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because I know them so well.
But. Right. Well, I think, you know, there's probably just some inherent bias, you know, when your friends show up. It's very hard to, you know, try and get around that. But, you know, you just try to remain objective when you're writing your questions, picking your questions and stuff like that.
The way I get around it is sports.
Yeah.
Because I know none of them like sports and none of them... Well, that's not true. Kristen does, but sports, I don't think are any of theirs, like, they're like main deal.
Right. I was looking at our top 10 highest scores ever list for No Nonsense Trivia. Wet Boys slipping now off the top 10. You guys have the number 10 position. But unless you guys start coming to one of these trivia nights again, I miss you guys.
We've tried getting something together on Mondays, but it's been rough.
Yeah.
I almost ended up going there last Monday, but it's just been, you know, it's been tough getting all of us together.
Yeah. I mean, you know, if you ever want to come solo, I think Elise was playing solo. She'd probably have you on her team. You know, you guys could team up. She did pretty good as well. You know,
yeah. Monday, I almost went too. I actually messaged them and none of them could go. Mm. So I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm just going to go home. And then I see these updates like an hour too late. Hey, I'm done your play. I'm like, son of a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
She's actually going to be filling in for me on Wednesday.
Yes.
At Nice Guys.
That'll be exciting.
So she asked me, mm-hmm, or you, if you, mm-hmm, ever need somebody, fill in. And I had to go out of town. I was like, well, you know, I've given, you know, this person a shot, that person a shot. I figured since she wanted it, I'd have her sub in for me. And I'm sure she'll kill it on the mic.
Yeah. And I just want to compliment you, too. I'm not sure if this is something that you've intentionally done or if it's coincidence. But since we had that letter, you've been bringing in some lady quizmasters for their first quiz ever in your absence. And I just think that's really cool that you're kind of like, you know, giving that platform and not just going with the regular crew of quizmasters that we have available in this town.
No, yeah. Actually, even before her, I remember, you know, I think I remember Kristen remarking at one point that she would like to hear more of a female presence on the show. Mm-hmm. And so I think we've made a pretty big effort to try and, you know, make it as equal as we can.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, from day one, I you know, for the podcast, I've thought, you know, it'd be good to have.
Well, I guess that same thing had an effect on me personally, you know.
Right.
You know, and plus it doesn't hurt that Elise loves trivia and was like, I want to fill in. I was like, well, I need someone to fill in. Let's try it.
So, absolutely.
Very cool. Excited.
Can't wait
to
check that out at Nice Guys. If you want to play No Nonsense Trivia live in the coming weeks, you have a few opportunities to do so. First, we'll be at the Palace Pub and Wine Bar tonight, Monday, September 16th, 2019, at 7 p.m. The categories for the quiz will include baseball, the Roswell incident, SpongeBob SquarePants, porn culture, the Tour de France, and more. The final question category this evening will be Disney parks, selected by last week's Biggest Learners, Single Riders. Tuesday, September 17th, 2019, we'll be back at Gather in Cape Coral for trivia. That one starts at 7 p.m. as well. Categories for the quiz will include dogs, NFL, boating and sailing, Spanish language, geography, astrology, and more. The final wager question category that night will be Quizmaster's Choice. On Wednesday, September 18th, 2019, we'll be at Bury Me Brewing Company again at 7 p.m. The Meat Cottage will be there. Categories for that quiz will include American Literature, Ghostbusters, Looney Tunes, Flatulence, Yonic Imagery, the U.S. Civil War, and more. The final no-nonsense wager question that night will be Rocky Balboa Movies, selected by Whiskey Business. Afterwards, check out Trivia Nice Guys Pizza, hosted by Mark Davis, which starts at 9 p.m. in the Cape. Then on Thursday, September 19th, 2019, we'll be at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar at our new time for the venue. That would be 7 p.m., new start time at Number 3 this week. The Meat Cottage will join us there as well. The categories for that night's quiz will include 80s movies and music, real estate, death metal, cars, Rick and Morty, The Office, and more. The final category that evening will be the television series The Curse of Oak Island, selected by the team Janice's Droplings. You can find more information about that and all of our live events online at nononsensetrivia.com. All of the No Nonsense events are free to play. You can win prizes after every round. Join us.
Won't you?
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we'll be back with some trivia in round one.
here's your first question.
I'm ready, Quiz Daddy.
Vesna Vulović.
Never mind.
Was a Serbian flight attendant who holds the Guinness Book of World Records for what?
Well, I'm going to assume that it's something flight attendant related. Or flight aviation related, I should say, I guess. Since that hint was in there. But it, I mean, it's possible that, you know, she has a world record for something not, and that's just her primary occupation. That's how you're describing her. But I'm gonna travel down that path and go into aviation territory. So I'm gonna say it's either gonna be most number of flights, or most continuous time in the air, maybe. She served on a particularly long flight, but see, there wouldn't just be one flight attendant. So she would probably, if it was continuous airtime, she would probably share that with the other flight attendants on her crew. So, all right, most flights. That sounds pretty good now. Least flights, maybe. Flight attendant, one flight.
Half a flight.
There's got to be multiple flight attendants that have only done one, though. And then not for me.
Right.
You know. Oh, I had motion sickness. What was I thinking?
Because they would literally have to be like, yeah, as soon as the wheels leave the ground, yeah, and you're like, please put it down.
Yeah, regret.
Abort.
I'm going to say number of flights.
Vesna Vulović is a Serbian flight attendant who holds the Guinness Book of World Records for surviving the highest fall without a parachute.
Oh, my God. Wow. Highest fall.
Without a parachute, yes.
Do you have a distance on there?
I can look. I do know that.
What the hell happened?
there was a briefcase bomb tore through the baggage compartment of a plane she was in. And, yeah.
Damn. So I guess maybe everybody else didn't survive and she did. And that's why she gets the record.
Yes.
Wow. Sole survivor.
She was discovered by a villager who heard her screaming amid the wreckage.
Ugh.
Her turquoise uniform was covered in blood, and her 3-inch stiletto heels had been torn off by the force of impact.
Jesus. What year was this, does it say?
1971 is when she got the job. So, 1972.
Wow. So that was a little over 40 years ago.
Yeah. And she fell from Vesna Vulović.
Vesna Vulović. Remarkable.
There she is.
She looked like that after the fall?
Probably not.
Is she still alive?
No. She died a while ago. She admitted to having survivor's guilt.
Oh.
They reenacted her fall in 2005 on Mythbusters.
Wow. I mean, I can understand why you would get survivor's guilt. Especially when, you know, the whole world is telling you, oh, you got a world record. It's a good thing. Now you're famous.
It says in the last years of her life, Vulović lived on a pension of £300 per month in her dilapidated Belgrade apartment. I don't know what to say when people say I was lucky, she remarked. Life is so hard today. Jesus
Damn.
Christ.
Great question.
Thanks.
I've never heard that story before. That's awesome. You know. Even though it was on an episode of Mythbusters, apparently.
Infotainment.
Yeah.
Edutainment.
Yeah. All right. I've got a wine question for you. You know, we
Palace style.
We are at Palace every week, so I've been reading up on the wine a little bit. Named for an ancient king of Babylon, what size wine bottle will hold up to 20 standard 750 milliliter bottles of wine? 20 bottles of wine in one. What is that called? It's named after an ancient king of Babylon.
I feel like this is one of those questions where someone would say, just think of a Babylonian king. Like everybody, and I'd be like, I guess I don't know what a Babylonian king is.
Do you want me to give you a more pop culture oriented hint?
Sure.
Okay. This shares a name with Morpheus's ship in The Matrix.
Oh, what's the name of his ship? God damn it.
It's hard without a sussing partner, isn't it?
It is.
You're all alone. Self-sus. It's hard to self-sus. As we've said many times before. That's how you and me started. We were just self-sussers when we started this podcast.
Still sitting on the couch when parents were gone.
What else are you going to do?
Young boy, 13 years old.
Got a sus.
Can't even drive. Got a sus when you're home alone. Oh, I know I'm going to hear it, and it's going to hurt me so bad because I remember them talking about it in the first movie.
Yeah, they say the name like 100 times.
Yeah. And I don't know why, but for some reason, I just keep thinking of fucking pharaoh names. I'm like, Tutankhamun. I'm like, no.
Mm.
My brain's like, Tutankhamun? I'm like, will you fucking stop it?
King Tut.
Try that one. Yes, I'll take a King Tut of wine, please.
That is a badass name for a giant bottle of wine, though. Yeah. Tutankhamun.
If you got it in the shape of the tomb.
Oh, my gosh. Get on that.
All right.
Marketing genius. Mark Davis.
I'm coming up on my end. Name of the ship. Nebuchadnezzar.
Yes, that's right.
Is it really?
Yes.
Are you fucking with me right now?
You came up on your end and it was correct. Yeah, that's right, man. The Nebuchadnezzar. Or King Nebuchadnezzar.
What the fuck?
Yeah. It was in there. It was filed away.
I don't know how that happened. In the
darkest corner of your brain.
Do you want inventions or sports?
Now, I'm not a sports guy, but I feel like this is like some weird trick question. Like this invention question is equally hard. So, fuck it. I'm going with sports.
Okay.
I'm living dangerously today.
I wouldn't say there's no chance you could get this, but I'd say it might be tough.
The sports question? Oh.
What Boston Celtics player was known by the nickname The Chief? It's around the 1980s. And it's not Larry Bird.
It's the only one I know. And I knew I knew it wasn't him because I've never heard.
Do you just want me to give you the other one?
Yeah, I think so. Wait. I'm picturing the Celtics jersey in my mind and trying to put like players' faces with it. Did this person have some kind of like a nose guard or
no?
Okay, never mind then.
The correct answer is Robert Parrish.
Oh, I think I had his card when I was a kid.
There you go.
But I did not follow sports even then, so it was just a basketball card to me.
Well, this may be just as hard then. In 1954, Robert Frank Borkenstein registered a trademark for what invention with a portmanteau name?
Portmanteau name. And now I'm blanking out what a portmanteau is.
Now
it's a mashup word, right? It's like two words put together.
Yes.
Okay.
So initially I just asked this question and that was it. And then I went out and Jamie's team was like, what's a portmanteau? It's like, you guys don't know what a portmanteau is?
Okay.
I was like, well, if I tell you, I've got to tell everyone. So yeah. I got on the mic and go, does anybody here not know what a portmanteau is? And everybody was like, yeah. I was like, so it would have been a lot harder if I did not.
Right. You know, yeah.
Help out with that.
That would be one of those variables that you could twist, you know, pull that little hint out.
You know.
And now you've just got Borkenstein to go on.
Pull it out.
Because I was going to say something related to like bringing dogs back from the dead, since his name is Borkenstein. That in itself is like a portmanteau, Frankenstein and Bork.
Nebuchadnezzar.
So in 1958, you said Borkenstein invented what that is a portmanteau name?
Yes.
In 1958, right before the 60s started, invention. Could I get a little teeny tiny hint? Like, is it a toy? Is it a tool? Is it?
It is not a toy.
Okay.
It is
just like an industry, just like a, you don't have to.
Police.
Okay. Portmanteau, 1958. Now, all right. So, I mean, police, there's hundreds of objects in my mind now, but now I'm like sifting for the portmanteau. Borkenstein.
Robert Frank, Bob Frank Bork.
That's his nickname.
As his friends would call him. Hey, Bob Frank Bork.
Bob Frank first name, Bork Bork last name.
It might also be Borkenstein. I don't know.
If only we could ask him. Let's see here. 1958. So probably well integrated into things by the time of the civil rights movement. So it's not something like handcuffs, because that's like old. And I'm not even sure if they would consider that to be a portmanteau. Because a portmanteau is like half of each word. It's not just like two words put together, right?
I can't give you any more information already given.
Maybe surveillance, something related to surveillance. Crowd control. Squad car. Didn't have one of those till 1958. Ugh. I don't know, man. This is a tough one. Did anybody get this?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. So this is a toughie.
Uh-huh.
This is a proven toughie.
Mm.
Field proven. So if you're a quiz master,
tried and true,
and you don't want any of your teams to get this question right, or a question right, throw this bad boy in there.
Please.
Even with your clue, if you didn't give me the clue, I would have given up by now, you know, but I don't know. I have no idea.
The correct answer is breathalyzer.
Oh.
Breath analyzer.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Very good.
Mr. Bork Bork. Bob Frank Bork Bork.
Keep that in mind.
Thanks, Bob Frank. Yeah. B.F. Bork Bork.
How do you think he thought of that?
I don't know.
You think that cops were just like, hey, let me smell your breath. Oh, hoo-wee.
This guy.
If only I had some device. Hey, yeah. Bob Bork Bork. Bob Frank Bork Bork.
What can you do?
This guy's breath smells like he drank two Nebuchadnezzars. All right, I've got a cryptozoology question for you next. You're familiar with the term cryptozoology, right?
Yes.
Yeah. It's a bit of a portmanteau. Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess zoology is its own word.
Zoology is, well, as yeah. I was going to say, I guess it's not a portmanteau.
No, it's just a compound word.
Yeah.
Boring. What is the nickname of the 7 to 8 foot tall ape man cryptid first reported in Missouri in 1971 that is believed to have a large pumpkin shaped head, a body covered in dark fur, and a stinky defense mechanism used to ward off any would be attackers?
What are your eyes telling me?
The devil is in the details. That's what my eyes are telling you.
Okay. Can you reread the question?
I will. What is the nickname of the 7 to 8 foot tall ape man cryptid first reported in Missouri in 1971 that is believed to have a large pumpkin shaped head, a body covered in dark fur, and a stinky defense mechanism used to ward off any would be attackers?
Stinky fart.
That's what he's got.
Pumpkin head. 8 feet tall?
Mm-hmm.
Cryptid.
Yes.
I'm not sure exactly what cryptid means.
A rumored to be believed creature like Nessie or the Chupacabra.
You said what kind of cryptid?
It is a ape man cryptid.
Ape man cryptid.
Yes.
Mr. Ape Man Cryptid.
Is that the Doors?
Mr. Ape Man Cryptid. Ape Man Cryptid.
As far as hints go, that is pumpkin not that's not the area shaped. That I'd be focusing on.
Missouri.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He's the Oh, skunk ape. That's what my answer. I would guess I'm wrong probably, but
you are wrong, and that's kind of why this is a tricky question, because it says ape man, and he does have a stinky defense
mechanism. And I thought it was down here.
Yes, that's the thing. The skunk ape is a Florida cryptid. The Missouri version, it sounds very similar. I'm not sure if the skunk ape has a pumpkin head, but the Missouri version is called Momo, which stands for the Missouri Monster, Momo.
Is that the thing that popped up on YouTube?
Popped up on YouTube. No, that is a different Momo.
Okay.
That's a, yeah, that's a different meme.
Then I've never heard of this Momo.
The creepy Asian lady that was said to be haunting YouTube.
Yeah, yeah.
Turned out to be like an art project or something. No, no, this is the Missouri Monster, very much like Skunk Ape, Bigfoot, etc. There is a docudrama about Momo premiering this week, actually, by director Seth Breedlove, a documentarian who specializes in cryptids. So check that out.
And while you're out there, y'all, breed some love, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he's made like 8 of these movies, documentaries on different cryptids and stuff like that. So it's clearly his passion. And I went and looked to see, because there's a cast. So like, is this fiction? Is it a documentary? It seems to be a blend of both.
Right.
And but the main cast member is also a lady who is the executive producer. So you don't see that too often. Usually that can be indicative of the quality, as is the case with most Tom Cruise movies.
Absolutely. Are we done with our first round, or do you have one?
That's it for me.
That's it for me.
Boom.
That means we take a break. That means we come back in a little bit.
Yes.
With more questions.
It's time for a no note slash miscorrection. Which one are we going to do?
Let's do the miscorrection first.
Okay.
Miscorrection.
All right. Our first, well, our only miscorrection comes to us from Abby. Mm. She writes, canned tuna is actually albacore tuna. The dolphin fish is what we would recognize as fish served under the name mahi-mahi.
Yes.
So I had a bit of a brain fart when I was going through that last week. But thanks, Abby, for the correction there. I knew there was something going on with the dolphin. It was, you know, a secret meat that we eat here. And now I know
it's a hush-hush meat, if you will.
Mahi-mahi. And I think that's probably just like, you know, oh, mahi-mahi. That sounds like, you know, some kind of exotic fish. And if you hear dolphin, yeah, we're going to eat dolphin. What? What was that dolphin's name? I can't even remember the name of that famous dolphin. Skipper? Flipper.
Flipper. Yeah, I was going to say Skipper.
Skipper? That's from Gilligan's Island.
Yes, yeah. And he's not a dolphin.
No.
Also funny, after that, she said, oh, one more thing. Did you think my correction was going to be about the speed of the dolphin ejaculation? And I said, yes, and she laughed.
I thought so, too.
Very good time.
All right. Also, we got a note here from Treehouse Sessions. That is a music channel in Austin, Texas. They wrote to us and said, guys, we found your podcast a few weeks ago. We love it. Keep up the good work and keep quizzing. And then they added, my only comment would be your awful English accents. I'm originally from London, so I can give you all some pointers if you like. But honestly, please. Really glad I found you guys. Hope it gets bigger and bigger, and hope to see you soon in Austin. So
awesome.
That's cool. Yeah.
Very fantastic.
Thank you to the Treehouse Sessions. There's a lot of really good performances on their channel, as you might imagine. So I know we got a lot of music fans that listen to the podcast. So we'll post a link to them in our show notes so you can check them out, too.
Beautiful.
And if you have a missed correction, a no note, or a rate my question, which we do have one coming up later, you can write them to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. You can send it to the other social media channels and stuff like that, but we really don't check those as frequently. So if you want to get it on the show, please email us, or Gmail us, I should say, as the case may be, nononsensetrivia@gmail.com.
Boom. Are you ready for the second round?
Give it to me.
Joan Rivers died in what year?
It was relatively recently. For a while in my later, more recent years, I dipped back into the Howard Stern show. And during this period, Joan Rivers died, and he talked about giving the eulogy at her funeral.
Wow.
And I think he said something like about, oh, I'm gonna butcher the joke. But he made some reference to her saying at a time when it would be inappropriate, like, my pussy is so dry.
Right.
And I think it might have been at another funeral. I can't remember the context. So I can kind of like actually map out this a little bit. Let's see here. You know, I think I was working on the video game Temple of Yogg at the time, actually. So that would be that game came out in December of 2015. So I'm going to say 2015.
The correct answer is 2014. Mm.
So close.
I love that sauce, though.
Thank you.
Even with 15, you didn't even question, like...
I really thought I was working on the game, and I guess I did start in 2014 a little bit.
Yeah.
But, or maybe I was listening to, like, back episodes or something like that. Anyway, it does, yeah, if there's a date question, totally helps to try and put yourself, you know... I don't know that I've ever gotten one of those right on the show yet, though. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm always, like, 1 or 2 years off, but so goes. Yeah. So goes. All right. So are you ready for your first question of the second
round? I am.
Okay.
I am whatever you say I am.
Here's a World War II question for you.
Okay.
Maybe you can channel your inner Seth.
Seth.
To the surprise of then-General Eisenhower, what weapon, nicknamed after a novelty musical instrument of the era, was issued to U.S. soldiers in World War II with no training whatsoever? What weapon? To the surprise of then-General Eisenhower, what weapon, nicknamed after a novelty musical instrument of the era, was initially issued to U.S. soldiers in World War II with no training whatsoever?
So these weapons are named after a novelty musical instrument?
They're nicknamed, but it's the main name that we would call this weapon. It's not. It's like a. It's a colloquialism. But they have individual model names, you know, that are like their official birth names, I guess you would call them.
Novelty musical instrument.
Yep.
Kazoo. The first two that come to mind are the kazoo and the slide whistle. But I don't think I've ever heard of any... weapon.
Get him with the slide whistle. Grooves in the heart.
Delight.
Yep, there's a famous use of a slide whistle in that song. Okay, so doing the whistle actually helps that sound a lot more like a slide whistle than going
delight.
Just a little bit. Do you remember? Did you ever sell like fundraiser stuff in elementary school?
At, yes.
Like, and get prizes for? Did you ever get one of those tubes that was like, I love those things.
Where are they now?
What are those called? Not a slide whistle.
No.
A slide whistle dying.
Slow motion. I don't really, I'm going to go with kazoo.
Mm, yeah. A couple teams did that.
Yeah. So a couple teams made that mistake.
Yeah. But some teams got it right as well. The answer I'm looking for actually is the bazooka. Have you ever heard of a bazooka instrument?
Uh-uh.
It is a variation of the trombone. And it was invented by radio comedian Bob Burns in the 1910s. And was fully popularized by the 1930s. So,
bazooka.
Yeah. I can't remember who, but somebody coined the term when they saw it. It was, you know, a rocket launcher, you know, anti-tank weapon.
Does it go on your shoulder?
Yes. Oh, like, no. The musical instrument?
Yeah.
No. It's just a long tube, a telescoping tube with a bell on the end.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some kind of open reed. Sometimes it can be played with or without a mouthpiece, but
so it's, like a
it's
big
played
kazoo.
It's played in the falsette. I read about this today, so I know all the fancy terminology about it. But yeah, according to the book Weapons of Patton's Army, Eisenhower learned the night before American troops would land in North Africa that the soldiers had been issued the anti-tank weapon with no training whatsoever. They were holding it backwards. They were round them all up, bring them all back in.
And some training.
I think they did ultimately, you know, issue the training and reissue the weapons. But can you imagine handing somebody a rocket launcher and no training whatsoever? That means here you go.
Yeah, that's insane. These things can blow up a house.
Yeah, well,
good luck.
And there was a lot of accidents early on, like with the rockets getting stuck inside and then still exploding. Crazy shit. And they weren't even that effective against tanks, it turns out. They would they were used as like a last resort to prevent tanks from mowing down fellow infantry.
Jesus Christ.
So yeah.
All right, here's your question. McCarran International Airport is located in what city?
McCarran International Airport. Hmm. MIA.
Nope.
No?
Oh, sorry. MIA. Okay, I like that. I thought you were spelling like McCarran.
Mia Karen.
MICARR.
Macaron.
Macaron.
McCarran International Airport. Did you say city?
Yeah. It's in the United States.
Oh, it is?
It is. I'll give you that.
Thank you. Because I was like over in Australia, Scotland. It's like, where's McCarran? Where is McCarran? MIA. My brain is just like Miami doofus. It's Miami. But I think that's just, you know, the coincidence of the
initials.
Yeah. It might not even have the McCarran might not even have those three initials. It might be right. Three other. So that's just a dead end.
Yeah.
On that sus. I really don't know. I'm just going to have to process of elimination. It's probably not. I mean, cities can have multiple airports, but it's probably not like Chicago. It's probably not. I know it's not New York. McCarran. Is it McCarran or McCarran?
McCarran. M-C.
Okay.
C-A-R-R-A-N, I believe.
I don't recognize the name, but they were important enough to have an airport named after them. I'm throwing a Hail Mary on this, and I'm going to say Juneau, Alaska.
The correct answer is Las Vegas, Nevada.
I believe I've flown into that airport before.
There you go.
That was a terrible experience, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't the airport's fault.
I've flown there twice, I think.
Okay.
So.
For managers' conferences?
Yep.
Nice. That's where they send all the managers in the United States for their conferences.
Oh,
they
yeah.
just go right to Vegas. Now, when you do something
it's
like
an
that.
HR nightmare.
Yeah, I can imagine. When you do something like that, do you try to pad time for play on the outside of it? Like, oh, well, I'm going to fly out there, but I'm going to stay an extra 3 days or something? Or
no, we can't do that.
You're not allowed
there as long. Well, I guess maybe we could try. We could ask. But
because that's what I would do.
Yeah.
Not that I've ever been in that position.
Really soak it all in.
Yeah. Yeah, because I mean, it's like going to Vegas with your parents, you know?
It's actually not at all.
Oh, really?
No.
Shit got crazy?
Yes, very crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
How?
Yeah. People do. I mean, you know, we'd have work stuff like meetings and roundtable meetings or whatever, you know, every day for 3 days out of five or so. But afterward, you were free to do whatever you wanted.
You're all just human beings.
Unless we had like a certain thing. Like I know one year we went to see Elton John in the Million Dollar Piano. The next time we went, we saw Cher.
What's the Million Dollar Piano?
It's this piano that's like coated in like LEDs. So it like, but it, like they're so small that it looks like the piano. Like, I don't know if it's just made of like TV screens or what, but it like can change all these colors. And, you know, it's supposed to be one of the most expensive pianos.
Who else do you want playing that but Elton John?
Right.
Right?
Yeah, there's a short list.
All right. Here's your second question. Adult animation is the category, and the team that requested this said specifically not hentai.
Okay,
they just mean adult animation.
Gotcha.
You know, what 1971 animated film was the first to receive an X rating by the MPAA? It was directed by Ralph Bakshi and based on and named for a series of classic comics by influential independent cartoonist Robert Crumb.
Yeah, I thought I knew this, and I don't want to get Charles Kuralt like you were, where it's like, well, I know this, and then whiff.
Oh, my gosh. That was so embarrassing. I was so confident. Yeah. I've done it so many times.
Crumb is one of my favorite documentaries of all time.
It's a great documentary.
It is fantastic. Yeah. It is well done and it's captivating. And I believe they talk about him in addition to.
When was that shot? Like the 80s?
Yeah, it was like mid to late 80s, early 90s, something like that.
It feels timeless.
And who directed it?
Oh, who did direct it? That was a famous, I think it was a famous first.
It was.
Let's just treat this like a question, man. Don't look too soon.
It was a high level director.
Was it a woman?
I don't think so.
Mm.
It wasn't like a Penelope Spheris thing. Mm. It was a guy and it was like. It was like Scorsese big. It was like a big name.
But it's not anybody from that school of. It's not Coppola. It's not Scorsese. It's not George Lucas. It's not Spielberg.
No, I don't think so.
It's not Brian De Palma.
No.
It's not. Who else is it not? Let's just do this. How many directors are there?
A lot.
It's not Robert Rodriguez. It's not Quentin Tarantino. Oh. It's not.
I want to say something like JL. Jonathan Landis? It's not him.
No. It's not Robert Zemeckis.
No.
It's not. Let's think about these 90s directors, indie directors in the 90s. It's not Spike Lee. It's not. It's not.
It's not the Clerks guy.
Kevin Smith. It's not Harmony Korine. This is eating away at me right now.
Yeah. I'm looking it up.
All right.
What is it from? Terry Zwigoff.
Who directed American Splendor, right?
Yes.
And Sideways?
Wow. Terry Zwigoff plays in a band with Robert Crumb.
I guess they're buds. Ghost World.
Yep.
Art School Confidential. I love that movie.
Bad Santa.
Mm-hmm. but did not direct some of those other ones I was talking about. Wow. Anyway,
directed all of them, did not produce them or write them.
This has been a fascinating question within a question.
There you go.
But back to our Ralph Bakshi movie.
Oh yeah.
One more time. What 1971 animated film was the first to receive an X rating by the MPAA? Oh. Directed by Ralph Bakshi, based on and named for a series of classic comics by influential independent cartoonist Robert Crumb.
If my memory serves, Lee, the correct answer is Fritz the Cat.
That's a bingo. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. The project started after Bakshi left the studio Terrytoons after some shenanigans, and he started his own company. And Crumb was not interested in having a movie made of the Fritz character, but he eventually... relented after Bakshi showed up at his house to stay for a week and show him that he could draw in his style and how the animation would work by flipping through the pages and stuff like that. Have you ever seen it?
No.
It's quintessential like 70s counterculture.
Huh.
Bakshi wanted it to stand opposite of mainstream animation like Walt Disney. And he even satirizes the company in a scene where silhouettes of Mickey, Donald, and Daisy cheer on the Air Force, waving American flags as they napalm a black neighborhood during a riot.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's sometimes seen like his work in general is heavily criticized for being sexist and racist. He kind of shares that with Crumb in a way. Who also faces similar criticism. But Bakshi definitely opened up opportunities for women and minority animators to work on the film, which was not common during the time. In fact, we'll post a link to it, but there's a letter, a famous letter that Disney sent to
a woman who applied for a animation job. And they basically said, we do not take women for creative positions. Those are done entirely by young men. If you want to be an inker, which was seen as like not a creative enterprise, you can be an inker, but sorry. So Bashi was like, you know, in the 1960s, late 60s, early 70s, he was like, fuck all that. I'm starting my own company. I'm going to hire a lot of women, hire a lot of minorities, which are my friends anyway.
Right.
And he ended up giving a job to Brenda Banks. She was only the third African-American professional animator in the United States who would go on later to join animation crews for The Simpsons and King of the Hill.
Wow.
And Fritz, it's a real, like I said, it's quintessential counterculture from the 70s. But, and the, like I said, the first to receive an X rating from the MPAA, everybody, the people that like were releasing it didn't want to release it, but it's available and I'd recommend watching it if you're into animation or the 1970s and that culture and stuff like that. Check it out.
And you should definitely watch Crumb, the documentary about Robert Crumb, because yes, it is also amazing.
Directed by Terry Zwigoff.
Indeed. Here's your next question. Mm-hmm. Prior to being broken up for being a monopoly, what company controlled 80 to 85% of Rough Diamond distribution?
What company? Yeah. They controlled 80 to 85% of the distribution of Rough Diamonds?
Yes.
This is going to be one of those things where, you know, I can't think of it right now, but you're going to say something like it's actually Johnson & Johnson or something along those lines. Like a company that, you know, transcended that crime and, you know, took the money that they made off of that to go on and do other stuff that they're known for.
I don't think it's like that.
No?
But
oh, okay.
I don't, who knows?
I'm just speculating anyway, killing time because I have no idea.
Okay.
The something diamond company. I wonder if it has a name like that. What company? It's not going to be. See, you've already given me a little hint now, so I know it's not like Exxon or something like that. They like transitioned into a different market.
You're welcome.
But what company? 80 to 85%. That is a huge market share. I'm just ignorant about this. Do you think I've heard the name of this company before?
Yes.
I imagine a lot of the world's diamonds come from mining in Africa. And that was heavily colonized by the British. The French were there. So maybe it's a like a British or French company. The British Diamond Company. I don't know.
Think of a name you hear commonly when it comes to diamonds. Just throw it out there.
Zales.
The correct answer is De Beers.
De Beers. Shit.
De Beers Diamonds. Government came in there, smashed it up.
Well, good. I'm glad they did. But aside from that, yeah, that's, you know, that's a bit of like, that was a corner like with Nebuchadnezzar. De Beers is back there, but I could not access it.
You didn't. You didn't have access to the mainframe.
No, not this time. All right. My last question for you for this round is a language question.
Okay.
What word, known for being a defining characteristic of Danish culture, is used to describe an attitude towards life that emphasizes mindfulness, comfort and coziness, togetherness, and finding joy in everyday life?
What?
I don't know why I had to put so much sauce on that. I'll just read it normal now.
Okay.
What word known for being a defining characteristic of Danish culture is used to describe an attitude towards life that emphasizes mindfulness, comfort and coziness, togetherness, and finding joy in everyday life?
Comfiness, coziness.
And this is a heavily Danish word. I'll just give you that a hint. It does not sound like...
I don't even know if I know this word.
Okay. I recognize this because I remember seeing articles pop up about this like 5 years ago because it was like a movement, you know, in the West. But it's actually hygge.
I've never heard that before in my life.
Oh, yeah. It's so the idea is just that it's like anti-minimalist, Like, everything is just designed to be as comfortable and cozy as possible, you know, soft lighting, soft things everywhere. Lots of blankets.
Snowflakes is what you're talking about, Lee.
It's, I mean, some might call it that, you know, but some might call it hygge. Hygge.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hygge. Here's my last question.
Not to be confused with hygge.
Hybidi, hybidi, hybidi. Here is your last question of the second round. Terry Nichols was the co-conspirator in what major crime during the 1990s?
Terry Nichols.
N-I-C-H-O-L-S, not like...
Yeah.
They call him Terry Nichols.
No. I got you. I definitely recognize this name, and I recognize the spelling of it, too.
They call him that because he puts nickels on a guy's eye once he smokes them.
And he was the accomplice, you said?
Co-conspirator.
Terry Nichols.
He wipes his eyes.
Yeah.
When he gets up in the morning and he steps outside.
And you said in the 90s.
Deep breath. Yep.
My first instinct is the Oklahoma City bombing. And my second thing was, what were the names of the Columbine shooters? But that was Eric Harris and Dylan Klebold. So I think I'm going to go with the Oklahoma City bombing.
That's correct.
Finally, a correct answer.
Boom. He got through.
Wow. And you know what's funny, though? I can't remember the name of the guy, the main guy now. The main guy. The guy that was...
Timothy McVeigh.
That's right. Yeah. McVeigh. And that was a terrible attack. There was a daycare involved in the...
Yeah.
And the bombing, too.
Very ugly.
All right. Well, that's the last question, I guess, for round three.
Nice.
So now
downer.
That we're sufficiently bummed out, we're going to take a break and recuperate. And then we'll be back with a Rate My Question from proverbial lightkeeper Dylan.
Boom.
For a Rate My Question?
I believe so.
Rate My Question.
Oh, Ray.
Yeah, it's me. I'm back with my beautiful children. Matthew! Gregory! Alexandra. I know my own daughter's name.
Alexandria? I can't remember. And?
And Joseph. Little Joseph.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Uh-oh.
Jonathan, right?
It's Joseph. I named him.
Well, whatever.
I named him.
I can change his name if I want to.
I hope that's his name.
Give thanks.
He was in that give thanks thing. That's from a pre-roll that they did at the movie theaters,
yep.
Right? For United Way or something like that.
That's exactly
it. And they had
a bunch of
celebrities saying give thanks in normal voices.
One of them is Hispanic and he says it in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
You can give thanks.
Give thanks.
That's as good as I can do it.
Is that all right?
Can I go home?
All right.
He is Zach Braff's dad.
Oh. For a second I was like, really? we got a Rate My Question here from Dylan. Says, hi, Quizzaddies. A standard human neck has 7 cervical vertebrae. How many does a giraffe have?
Ooh.
I like it. Short and sweet.
Dylan's them getting long once they get up there.
You see Dylan? You know Dylan, right?
Dylan.
I don't know his last name off the top of my head. But he's been playing with Team Moist lately on Monday nights. And he's also a proverbial lightkeeper. So
yeah, it's the Dylan I'm thinking of.
Yeah, the Dylan you're thinking of.
I didn't know. Hi, Dylan.
Hi, Dylan.
I didn't know he listened to me so much.
Yeah, Yeah.
I miss Dylan.
How many cervical vertebrae does a giraffe have, Mark?
I think it's kind of a trick question. How many does a human have?
Seven.
Could it also be seven? Could it all be also be seven, but they're longer?
Well, what is a cervical vertebrae? When I think of cervical, I think of cervix, which is like down towards the genital area.
You don't want to think cervix, I don't think.
No?
No.
Well, what if this is, what if you, you're right, it's a trick question, and it's like, ha, you thought I meant the neck muscles, or neck vertebrae? I'm talking cervical. They got none, you know?
Read the question again.
I think it says, oh, I don't have it here. I was going to say the standard human neck. Like, it comes standard. You could get it customized if
this
you want.
This baby.
Oh, it does say standard.
Okay.
A standard human neck has seven cervical vertebrae. Oh, it does say neck.
Okay.
So the cervical vertebrae are the neck. Maybe I should read this question again. How many does a giraffe have? It is not in the groin area.
How many does a giraffe? I just think it's one of those where someone's going to answer like, you know, obviously it's either going to be like 50
mm-hmm.
or it's going to be like six. It's going to be some crazy or seven. It's going to be some crazy number. Or it's going to be basically exactly the same.
I don't think they're elongated. I think they have very like flexible necks. So I'm going to err on the higher side.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, 50 is a nice even number. We have seven. So it's probably like 52.
47
like that. 47? You think even the sevens are the same? It's just got like 40 extra?
Brother, I don't know the answer. I'm just throwing it out.
It's as good as guess as any.
Brother.
Mark, I'm sorry I doubted you, man. Seven is the answer.
Yes.
Yeah. So what do you think of that question for Dylan? It is a
great
question. Yeah, yeah. It's tricky.
I would say
that's a trick question because you do exactly what I did.
Well, I mean, I would say that this is partially kind of reading your host. Because if you know your host usually doesn't have really, really hard questions. So maybe like if you asked this, I would be more inclined to put seven. Because like Lee's not the kind of person to put something that would be like 30. It could be any in it, literally any number, seven or above.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I'd be more inclined to guess like either a whole number or the original number. Me, I'd be like, okay, this could be like 28. Mm-hmm. This could be like 54.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, I just went with my gut.
Yeah. It looks like these vertebrae can get as long as 10 inches.
Hell yeah.
A piece. So that means 70 inches for the full neck. That's crazy. Neck.
Yeah, it's great.
Crazy great.
Indeed. Yeah, how do you feel about that question?
I like it.
Okay.
It's good. I don't think I could improve it, but once you know it, now that I've heard it, I think it's going to be pretty easy to remember. So right. If I come across it again, you know, I'll have that in my back pocket. And it does seem like something that could be a popular trivia question because I put that in the category of fun facts. You know, it's just a fun fact to know.
Now, let me ask
you
this.
I like it. Yeah.
Do you think that if the question was not how many vertebrae do or how many cervical vertebrae do giraffes have in their neck without giving you the hint that a human has seven? Do you think you would still remember?
So that raises a good point. You know, this question is pretty good actually because it includes that, and I do believe, as you're suggesting, that helps the retention,
you know,
of the fact. And if it was just how many vertebrae does a giraffe have, it wouldn't framed against the human. That makes it more interesting too.
This is my actual question: is this? Do you think that you will only remember the answer to this question if the question you hear in the future is adults have the standard adult has seven cervical vertebrae in their neck? How many does a giraffe have? Will you only remember the seven if it's in the question like that? Or will you remember the number seven forever and ever from now?
I think I'm going to remember it forever and ever from now, mainly because we're recording this podcast. And I'm going to remember talking about it. Because
I remember hearing so many questions where I go, I'll never forget this.
Right.
And then I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah.
Like, I don't remember a month later.
Yep. It all plays into it, you know? And man, sometimes I'll write a trivia question. I don't write it down. And then just this past weekend, Kyle and I were on a trip together. And we were talking about something, and I was like, oh, that's a great trivia question. She was like, yeah, that's good. And I was like, we've got the category this week and everything. Like, we'll write that down for it. We'll use it for that category. And then next morning, hey, what was that question again?
Yep.
Oh, my gosh. I don't remember. Lost. Gone to time. Yep. You know? So if you don't, like, regularly use it or really commit to it, you know, in a certain sense, a lot of this can, you know, fall to the wayside. Are you ready for some final questions, Mark?
I am.
Okay.
I'm going first, yes?
I think I was going to, if okay. you want.
No, no, please.
Okay.
I may be wrong.
Vegetables is the category.
Ugh.
It's a bit of a history question, too.
Okay.
Closely related to garlic and onions, what vegetable is one of the national emblems of Wales after, according to legend, King Cadwaladr of Gwynedd ordered his soldiers to identify themselves by wearing the vegetable on their helmets in an ancient battle against the Saxons?
Closely related to garlic?
And onions.
And onions. Helmets shaped like it.
Well, they would wear the vegetable on their helmet to identify themselves.
Okay.
As the legend goes, it is a national emblem of Wales, but there are several sources of why, and this is just one of them. Probably the oldest related story.
I don't know. I'm going to go up with it. I'm going to end up with an answer that I don't think is going to be right, but it's coming to my head. Shallots.
No, it's not. That was a popular answer.
Was it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I like when I hear that stuff because mm-hmm. I think I'm less dumb.
Yeah.
At least that wasn't like a terrible guess.
I would say about half the teams wrote down that. A couple teams bailed on the question entirely, didn't write anything down.
That's stupid.
And just a few got it right. Leek is the answer. Leek. Now, this battle takes place in a leek field. So the legend is that they would identify themselves with the leek. Don't you think that's more camouflage, though?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
Like, it's the opposite of identification.
Yeah. I've heard of leeks. I don't know if I've ever had one.
Oh,
I'm sure,
dude,
I have at some point. But
one of my favorite foods is potato and leek soup.
Oh.
It's so good. It's like, you get some, like, heavy cream. Scratch that. I don't know how to cook. But it has a very creamy potato texture, and the leeks, yeah, it's like a mixture of garlic and onions in one thing. So you just chop them up real fine into little thin slices, and then they're nice and buttery and soft.
Do you remember the French word used for that?
Usually green leaf vegetables, yep. Right? Thin strips. Chiffonade. I'm learning. Thank you for jogging my memory on that.
Gotcha.
I'm going to remember it a little bit longer.
Watch
now.
Watch it out for you, baby.
I'm going to remember a little bit longer now.
Here's the last question for you.
All right.
Who sang "It's My Birthday and I'll Cry If I Want To"?
Ooh. Oh, man. So this is the early 60s, right?
Yep.
Early 60s. It's my party and I cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. Cry if I want to. You would cry too if it happened to you.
Bum 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 bum.
I wonder if that's an early. I don't know. It might be. I'm not sure if that's a one hit wonder, or if it's somebody famous. I wonder if it's the Supremes, like an early Supremes song. I also don't know that I can even identify the race of the singer. And I'm not just saying that to be cool.
That's how I was for the longest time with Son of a Preacher Man.
Yeah.
Always thought Dusty Springfield was black.
Mm.
Forever. And I saw a picture of him and I was like, no, like Son of a Preacher Man. Like, yeah, that's her. And I was like, oh, okay. That's when I started realizing that I was definitely like automatically imagining
mm-hmm.
certain types of people with certain voices.
Right. Right.
Oops.
Mark, is it the Supremes?
It is not. The correct answer is Leslie Gore.
Leslie Gore. Okay.
Leslie Gore.
I know primarily of Leslie Gore through our mutual admiration of musician Advance Bass, a.k.a. Cassio Tone for the Painfully Alone.
Indeed.
I know both of us really got into his work. Owen, his name's Owen Ashworth?
Yes.
Owen Ashworth.
That's him.
Yeah.
Cassio Tone for the Painfully Alone.
Do yourself a favor and go listen to some of that. It sounds dour, and it is, folks. It really is.
Absolutely.
Just amazing songwriter, amazing performer. I've seen him live a couple times. Mark, he played in your living room on a tour once.
He did.
You asked me to design a flyer.
And you did.
And I did. And then I saw him in Tallahassee, and I had the flyer. He was like, how'd you get that? I didn't see it. I was like, oh, I designed it. And we talked. He gave me some of his zines and stuff like that.
That's awesome.
Very nice guy.
We took him out to chicken wings.
Oh, my God. I wish I could have come down for that
one. It was so awesome.
I was like, I think it was at a comic convention that weekend or something, like C2E2 or something like that. But the song title, the Cassio Tone for the Painfully Alone song, is called Leslie Gore on the TAMI show.
Yeah, Gore was one of the featured performers in the TAMI show concert, which was recorded and released in 1964 and placed in the National Film Registry.
Cool.
She one of the longest sets in the film, performing 6 songs.
Hmm.
Oh, wow. She did You Don't Own Me.
Can you hum that one for me?
It's the one that goes, you don't own me. I don't know any other guy. You don't own me. Don't tell me what to do. And don't tell me what to say.
I feel like I've heard this once or twice. Like, it's ringing a bell. But I could not sing the next lyrics or anything like that.
Yeah. Should jam it.
Check out Leslie Gore as well. Okay.
Indeed.
That concludes this episode of the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast. My name is Quizmaster Lee. Mark, thanks for joining me today in the studio here. And thanks again for listening, everybody. You can check out No Nonsense Trivia live on Mondays at 7 p.m. at Palace Pub and Wine Bar in Cape Coral. Tuesdays, we're at Gather for Ladies Night Trivia in Cape Coral. That starts at 7. Wednesdays, we're at Bury Me Brewing in Fort Myers, again at 7. You can catch Mark Davis. Usually you can catch Mark Davis at Nice Guys Pizza Trivia on Wednesdays.
Not this week.
Nope. Our friend Elise will be filling in and trying out so she's never hosted trivia before?
She's been to a lot of them, never hosted though. She's excited.
Yeah. I think she said come out and heckle me, so she'll be getting her come up.
Her questions on the podcast were great too.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. She's awesome. All right. And then Thursday we're at Number 3 Craft Brews and Beer Bar in downtown Cape Coral.
Also at 7.
Yes.
Changed it up on them.
Mm-hmm.
You had to do it to them.
I had to do it to them. Thanks for listening, everybody. Join us every Monday morning for a new episode by subscribing to the No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on your favorite podcast platform. You can support the No-No in several ways. The easiest, by sharing the episode on your social media accounts with your friends. So easy.
So easy to do.
You could also
tell 2 friends.
Yeah. You could also leave us a written review on your favorite podcast platform. But I should note that we have not gotten any reviews since our last request. And not only does that sting, but we've totally fallen off the Apple comedy charts now. So we could really use a review. If you could just take a second to get us back up there.
How's anyone going to know we're funny?
Yeah, I know it's cool to like stuff that, you know, is not like quite big yet, but we need your help, guys, please.
And one or the other here. I mean, preferably both, but tell some people about us if you like it.
Yeah.
So we get people to listen. And if not that, leave a couple reviews, huh?
Yeah.
Help us out so other people can find out.
Yeah. You can also support the podcast on Patreon by visiting our website,
thenono.com. Con dinero.
Yeah. Just click the support link at the top. It'll take you to our Patreon page. By the way, we got some new bonus content going up this week, so check that out.
Ooh.
And we're gonna up the energy on that. So thank you to our Patreon supporters for helping us out with the show. Thanks to our quiz daddies, Tommy from the Electric Mud and Tim from San Diego, from Pat's Garden Service. Thanks also to our team captains, Rachel, Aaron, Kristen, and Fletcher.
Thank you all.
And thanks to our proverbial light keepers. We got a new one this week. Real quick before we start. No, you know what? We'll bring him into the beat. Here we go. Thank you to our proverbial lightkeepers, Hank, Dylan, Justin, Cooper, Elise, Aaron, Sarah, Brina, Carly, Christopher, Josh, Max, Lucas, Sean, and Gil. Big thanks also to our Rumble Snailskins, Manu, Jeff, Efren, Steven, Michael C., and Michael J.
Michael J.J.
If you'd like to write us with a rate my question, a missed correction, or a no note, you can do so by writing to us at nononsensetrivia@gmail.com. And please follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube at No Nonsense Trivia, and on Twitter at No Non Trivia. We also have a Facebook group that you can join.
More and more people joining it.
Yep.
It's getting to be quite a packed little palace.
I like it. I like it. Thanks for joining up to that. Just search for No Nonsense Trivia Podcast on Facebook. It'll bring you right there. And finally, don't forget to leave us a rating on your favorite podcast service. 5 stars only, please.
5 stars only, please.
Until next time, No Nonsense listeners, have a great week.
Bye-bye.